Governor Holcomb has actually, some people say, undone several things that Governor Pence had done. For example, removing the previous criminal history box from the applications for state government employment, and of course, pardoning Keith Cooper, and a couple of other things. But the opioid thing is what's getting attention right now. People will remember that Mike Pence was actually opposed to the idea of needle exchange programs. He had to be convinced with an awful lot of information that that was the direction we needed to go, beginning down in Scott County and then in other counties. But with Eric Holcomb, we have somebody who has decided to not wait, but instead to become much more proactive. Some will argue not proactive enough, but much more proactive in trying to address these issues throughout the state. We have the 6 treatment centers that will be opening up sometime soon, depending on where you are. And I don't think that that's going to be the last that we hear about ways in which the opioid crisis will be addressed.
Do you think that in this particular case, and maybe some others as well, too, that we see the differences in the person between Mike Pence, who is a very religious conservative, and Eric Holcomb, who is definitely a conservative, but a little different in nature?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, that helps to drive a couple of points home. Number one, that conservatives are not all the same. A lot of people like to lump conservatives and liberals all into the same camp, so to speak. But there's variety among conservatives. There's variety among liberals. And with Eric Holcomb, there were a lot of people wondering what he would be like or who he would be like. Would he be more like Mike Pence or would he be more like Mitch Daniels? Because he sort of straddled both worlds. And I think at this point, people are saying he's a little more Mitch Daniels-like than Eric Holcomb-like. And for some people, that makes them very happy. For other people, a little less so. But he's certainly not run away from social issues or sort of left traditional social issues behind, abortion, et cetera, but instead is being more proactive about some issues that are generally being agreed to be big problems in the state, like the opioid issue.
And I understand this in this last case here that Governor Holcomb has gotten rather emotional, which is not necessarily something that you might could see from Mike Pence.
No, Mike Pence, I think everybody understands, Mike Pence is very... very put together. You'll occasionally see him get a little riled up when he's given a good red meat sort of speech, but he's not somebody you expected to see a lot of emotion from. Mitch Daniels didn't expect to see a lot of emotion from him either. Eric Holcomb is establishing himself as Eric Holcomb, and one of those things means being touched and moved by very difficult personal stories. And obviously, when it comes to things like drug addiction, it's easy to find stories that are just heart-wrenching, and those obviously have some effect on him.
Do you think that it's this attitude that he has had, certainly about the opioid crisis, that in turn kind of got lawmakers a bit more, I guess, maybe persuaded into helping fund more programs?
You know, I think that when it comes down to it, if people can speak from a personal standpoint, or if we can put a face to sort of the numbers of a problem, I think that's very helpful in terms of moving policy forward. And goodness knows, in counties across the state, we're seeing problems in terms of drug addiction, opioid drug problem being the big one right now. And there are a couple of legislators who took this on as their own issue because of either friends or family who were affected by it. And that's always going to kind of help move the issue forward. There are some folks who want to be, you know, very objective in their analysis of policy, et cetera. But when it comes right down to it, if you can put a face on a bunch of numbers, that makes it easier for people to understand and, in many respects, be compelled to move and want to do something about a problem.
One of the other people who has been involved in politics for years and years, working with the General Assembly as well as with other issues in the state, has come back into the news lately here too. Luke Kendley, who is very instrumental in helping craft, in particular, this current two-year budget now in effect that was going through the legislature during the session earlier this year, and others in the past as well too, is very much involved in politics and with issues that we've talked about, road funding and bridge funding and the like. He's decided he was going to retire from his life as a politician, and now I understand there's some people that are already, well, this is not going to happen until into the fall, there are already people who are very interested in wanting to take his spot.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I think everybody probably remembers that when a sitting elected official leaves that office, whether it's because they move out of state or move on to another office or just retire from an office, or resign from an office, it's the precinct committee people in that jurisdiction who get to decide who the new office holder will be. And what that usually means is that the candidates who run in those caucuses have to campaign to just a handful of people instead of having to campaign to the, you know, 60,000 or so people who happen to live in a state Senate district. Now it's just going to be campaigning to the 100 or so precinct committee people. That's a whole lot more manageable. Granted, the time frame's a lot more compressed. But caucuses bring people out of, bring candidates out of the woodwork. It's a smaller group to campaign to, and there's really no danger in throwing your hat in the ring. In other words, if you're a member of the Indiana House of Representatives and you try to run in a primary for a state Senate seat, you're pretty much giving up your House seat. But in this case, you can throw your hat in the ring, and if you don't win the caucus, no harm, no foul. You just go back to the office you held.
And we know even in one particular case that just recently you got word that a member of the Noblesville City Council in the county in which Luke Kenley resides and is presiding is interested in taking his spot when it's time for this caucus to come about.
Yeah, and I think we can expect to see several other people, many of them probably elected officials, stepping up wanting to do that. It makes sense that someone from Noblesville would want to do that. That's a large part of the district that, in terms of the folks who live in it, a large number of them live in Noblesville. It's a place that I think a lot of people look to for leadership within that district. It's not the only place, obviously, but for a lot of folks, they sort of think of that as, if not the seat, so to speak, of the district, certainly a place of great importance. But that doesn't mean that's the only person. Obviously, there are other municipalities in that area, or for that matter, even county officials, or for that matter, state representatives who might decide this is a seat that's of interest to them.
We're talking with Andy Downs, who is the executive director of the Mike Downs Center for Politics at IU Purdue Fort Wayne. And Andy, there's, a person in particular who is in a seat in Congress that's going to have some opposition, apparently. And there's also another seat that is being debated for some people to become candidates as well on the southern part of the state. And I guess the next congressional race isn't going to happen until next year. Interesting, we got some people that already said that they want to be running for office.
And normally we get a little time off, so to speak. And when you look at the nature of some of the congressional districts in Indiana, it's kind of surprising that you would have Democrats stepping up and wanting to take on an incumbent Republican in some of these very strong Republican districts. For example, the 3rd District where I'm sitting is a very Republican district. But we now have a number of people who have filed, including a couple of gadflies, and one person who I think people will identify as a legitimate candidate. She has a business background. She has some presence in the community already. And so I think there are people who are going to say she's a legitimate candidate, giving the Democrats at least some shot at that seat. But perhaps more impressively, down in the 9th District, which is the southeastern portion of the state, there are 3 Democrats looking to take on Trey Hollingsworth down there. And the 3 Democrats, on paper at least, look kind of like legitimate candidates. Now, none of them has run for office himself, so they haven't had to go out there and raise the money and be the target of all the slings and arrows the way that a candidate has. But on paper, you know, they look pretty good. And I'm sure the Democrats are very excited about that throughout the state and look for more people to step up and do that. This is going to be, I think, 2018, an interesting year. And remember, it's only July of 2017.
Are we finding that since we have all these people that are interested in running for public office, and in particular for a congressional seat, that they realize not only do they have do a lot of work in raising funds to be able to hold a campaign aloft so long if they decide to start early, but also, too, that they just know it's going to take a lot of their own personal time out to, they might as well get started now and start approaching the potential voters?
Well, you really do. You know, this is we've sort of left the time period where someone can blitz a campaign and have huge impact, especially somebody who's going to have a difficulty raising money. And you think about the Democrats in the 2 districts that I just mentioned. You know, those are districts that Democrats nationwide wouldn't really be targeting, saying, oh, yes, we're going to win that one, the 9th a little more so than the 3rd district. And that means that people are going to have to spend an awful lot of time raising money. They're going to have to raise over $1 million. And keep in mind that individual donations per election are $2,700. That's an awful lot of people, even if you can get them to max out, who have to max out to get up to $1 million. And it's one part raising money, spending an awful lot of time on the phone. And by the way, the incumbents, Jim Banks and Trey Hollingsworth, they'll be spending a lot of time on the phone raising money as well. But it also means getting out in the district and going to every lunch and dinner and breakfast they can get to, and walking neighborhoods and meeting with community leaders. It just is it's truly a time-intensive effort that people are committing to when they decide to run for office. And you're right, they can't do it just sort of quickly from, say, May of 2018 to November of 2018. The districts are, you know, they have enough people in them, 600 plus thousand people in them. They got to go out and talk to an awful lot of people. They might as well spread that out over a little more time. It also gives them time to build up name recognition a little more throughout the entire district and take a little more time developing the campaign and their stance on issues so that they're really well prepared by the time we get to the hot and heavy stuff of the summer of 2018.
And certainly when you're talking about the 9th Congressional District, which is down in southeast Indiana, you have more counties, and they're mostly rural counties. There are only just a few larger communities in that whole area there. And so you've got to make a lot of campaign stops in a lot of small communities all across that part of the state to get to the voters and tell them your views and get their support. So it's a little different than if you're based in Fort Wayne, like you are, and having that district there, it's a little more compact, and there are a number of counties up there, of course, to do some campaigning in, but not quite as spread out as down south, I would sure.
Yeah, there's no doubt. You know, you think about Monroe County, where Bloomington is, and then running all the way over to the eastern border. That's not something that you do in 20 minutes. And there are a lot of small towns, like you said, between the borders of that district that you have to stop in and say hello to people.